Greetings to Bean Nation. Welcome back to BeanBits NBA Team Podcast. As we're now in the month of September, and we're getting ready with our team previews as the regular season is, it's still fairly far away, but we do see some light there at the end of the tunnel with this offseason. And we're going to be getting started from week to week with the season preview for the 2016-17 season, beginning with this tier. My name is Andrew Reich. I'm one of the co-hosts of the show, and I'm joined by Adam Murray.
Greetings. Salutations.
You sound so excited about our team previews beginning.
Well,
I mean, this is a big deal. This is going to be our third one. This is how our show started.
Yes, but with this one now, we started with just geographical. Now let's start with the worst. And
yeah,
you can only talk about these bad teams so many years in a row, and they're not changing.
Yeah, we did the divisionals. A divisional preview, I believe, the first time we did it, just because we didn't know what the hell we were doing. You know, we just wanted to get the content out there. And then we did tiers last year. Like, when we say tiers here, you know, we mean obviously, like, you know, sections of, like, teams that we think, like, crops of teams that we think are just not in the running all the way up to the top contenders. And, you know, judging by some of the ones that we had last year, if we had a second crack at it, I would bet that there was a few that we probably would have changed our minds on. And I think maybe for these that there might be a few too. And, you know, there's always a move in the preseason that you don't expect all the time that kind of throws into the equation. We'll try to, you know, keep tabs on everything there as we go along with the shows. The one thing I did want to mention is that we got a question on Twitter that was actually sent to the Place to Be Nation handle and tweeted back to me. Regarding the Vancouver Grizzlies, because we were doing the pick your expansion team episodes of parts one and two, which I'm glad everybody was able to listen to. But we had one particular fan who had an interesting question, you know, that I answered on Twitter about the arena in Vancouver and how that may or may not have been a factor in their relocation. But the point is, if you do have a question after listening to the show, you can go ahead and send it to my Twitter handle at Andrewriche on Twitter. Andrew Reich, my full name. And I almost forgot my name.
As opposed to all the other ways to spell Andrew.
I was like blanking. I was like, how do I spell Andrew? It's 7:30 in the morning here. And then for Adam Murray, he does have a Twitter handle, but he does not.
My Twitter handle is also Andrew Reich, spelled the same way.
Well, you do not. You have a Twitter handle, but do you not?
I have one tweet Twitter up from 2009, and that's it. It is just for reading only.
And you want that? You want that timeline to continue?
I don't. I don't tweet. I just.
If anybody has the energy, they can go ahead and try to find Adam Murray's Twitter just to ruin the timeline.
It's not difficult, but yeah. With just a quick thing on the Grizzlies. Yeah, they had the arena built with the. With the Canucks, GM Place, GM Palace. And it was at the end, like the last year, it's like, well, maybe if we had our own basketball arena. The Grizzlies were already sunk by then, and the ownership, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, was looking for any excuse to get out.
He sold it to the nearest person. I forget the name of the owner, but he had sold it to somebody who wanted to move it to St. Louis, and it got blocked, and then they sold it to the next owner.
Well, that was St. Louis, and then what was it? Louisville was also in the running to be the
Colonels. Yeah, and that's. I remember New Orleans got in there late, but then they got their crack at
the
Hornets.
It was poor management that did it at the end. No, their arena, they had built it, you know, with the, for the Canucks, so it was completely new. It was just it was big and it's not basketball friendly, and we'd like, well, you know, that was at the end of it. Their mismanagement also, and bad draft picks and bad, you know,
that's
lack
what
of
I was gonna. That was about to say. They did not get a superstar in the draft, and to be fair, a lot of people say, well, yeah, but they were an expansion team. But here's the truth, and we talked about this in the when we did our pick your expansion team shows when we did the exposition at the start. Usually, even those teams in the 80s and 90s. Like the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Miami Heat, usually after year three is when business picks up, where you really have to start gaining some wins. And Vancouver just never did it.
Well,
you have to
have a plan. And look at Toronto. Toronto is also an expansion team. And, okay, you got Camby, you got Stoudemire. We have a plan. Well, we got Reeves and we'll
– Well, they traded Camby and Stoudemire, but they did draft – McGrady and Carter.
But that was you traded Stoudemire, but you had him for a couple years. You were able to start building. And it was just, you know, poor, really just development and scouting and just, you know, it was what it was, but now we can look forward to now these bad teams.
But yeah, anybody with any question, I mean, any question would be welcome. So anything that you have to send to me, send at Andrew Reich. We used to have the NBA Twitter, but I think NBA team Twitter, but I think that's gone by the wayside. Speaking of really terrible teams that have been mismanaged, are you ready to talk about the bottom tier of our season previews?
Well, you know, this is actually...
I mean, I'm not saying this is going to be the worst episode, or will it? Just because it's the worst teams doesn't mean it's going to be the worst episode.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. Like, when I was looking at these bad teams, like, oh, I don't... But then it's like, some of them, you're like, you know what? I could see hope. I could see, you know, there seem to be brighter days. It's not all doom and gloom like it was last year. It's like, Philly, you still have no chance. We'll see you in a couple years. Brooklyn, you have no chance. We'll see you, you know, here again. But this time, I think it might be a little different.
Yeah, the theme of our episode, the title of this episode for this pack of teams is going to be called "Please Stop Believing." Teams that, for the most part, most casual fans, most writers who are doing previews, and probably including Adam and I, because we discussed all of these before. Obviously, we actually do prep work for these shows. You'll never believe it, judging by the way we put it together. But we actually do prepare these teams and like put them in certain like order. So me and Adam are basically in conjunction about most of these teams, about where they are on the pecking order for the season coming up. And for this one, Please Stop Believing, we have five teams. We have two in the Western Conference. We have three in the Eastern Conference. We're going to go alphabetically based on the name of the city in which they play. So it doesn't necessarily mean the first team I pick is like the very worst or the best of this pack. We're going to do that at the end of the show, along with a series of other questions, just like we did last year. Are you ready to go?
Let's do it.
Let's start with the Brooklyn Nets, who, pretty rotten year last year. Lionel Hollins was fired midway through. Tony Brown took over. They were 21-61. They were so bad, I thought they were almost worse than that. Like, I thought they were, like, more like a 15-win team. They were so bad. Brook Lopez played well, but he was the only dependable thing that they really had. There were rumors about him being moved in the offseason just because of the fact that it seemed like a fire sale. That Celtics trade that we've talked about millions of times in 2013 has terribly, terribly saddled them when it comes to, you know, drafting and being in a good position to get a lottery pick. So, you know, I'm not sure how bright the future is, like you were alluding to with Brooklyn, but it just doesn't seem like there's a lot of hope here at the top.
Not this year, but they do have cap room. Last year, they had Joe Johnson still and just albatross contracts and all this and that. This year, you know, they made smart decisions. Jeremy Lin, I think by all accounts, everyone's like, you know, that's a good signing. Drafting, they're going for home runs. You know, let's take these injured guys and hope they all bounce back.
Well, they had to move Thaddeus Young to get that draft pick, which they turned into Caris LeVert out of Michigan. So,
yeah, Caris LeVert, who you said was a lottery pick before his 25 foot injuries.
Yeah, he's had a lot of like lower extremity injuries. Yeah,
you know, Richard Hollis Jefferson, Rondé Hollis Jefferson. He was looking very good before his injury last year. Chris McCullough looks like he has a sign of life. Because he only had a half season from his ACL injury, so it's you have to start building from somewhere.
Now they did a lot of maneuvering, even though there's some bad teams that kind of are comfortable with standing pat, even though you know that that something needs to be done before the bottom falls out. But at least I'll give Brooklyn credit. They made a ton of moves. They also have a new general manager. I believe it's Sean Marks, right, who was a New Zealander. He is a New Zealander who was underneath the Spurs organization, and now he's the general manager for the Brooklyn Nets. He hired Kenny Atkinson, who was an assistant with the Atlanta Hawks. He's now the new head coach. Do you see a specific style, like, right off the bat with Kenny Atkinson? Maybe a lot of threes, maybe a lot of ball movement?
No, there's with young guys who don't know how to play as a team, it's going to be kind of hard to be like, let's all let's all agree to group basketball and let's all play, you know, as a team. But, you know, you have, I think, you know, you have Randy Foy, you have Grievous Vasquez, who can, you know, Jeremy Lin, players who not have the best of talent, but they can be, you know, coaches on the court almost with these young guys, which, you know, helping Sean Kilpatrick, Isaiah Whitehead, Issa Karis LeVert. You know, get smart guys, smart older veterans to help the younger guys.
Well, they also got him very much on the cheap. I mean, Vasquez was at $4.3 million, which is not terrible. $5.5 million for Luis Scola is a manageable contract as well. They're all one-year deals, too, or they're partially guaranteed on the second year. Justin Hamilton, who was a big man who had gone overseas for a year or two and came back over, played well in EuroLeague. They got him literally for pennies. So that was actually not a bad deal. Trevor Booker for $9 million for a year for 2 years, I kind of like shook my finger at, but you know, but they needed another big after Thaddeus Young was gone. So it was understandable. You talked about Jeremy Lin, who kind of remolded himself as a role player in Charlotte. And then there's all the other, you know, miscellaneous parts that you would normally see on a bad team trying to find their way. Just not a lot of youth though. You know, that's the biggest problem for them. You know, you only have Chris McCullough, Isaiah Whitehead, like you said, Karis LeVert. Do you think Anthony Bennett finds, like, any kind of life here?
There's hope for him here. This is the place for him to do it.
I mean, he took a hard fall.
He took a hard fall, especially after, you know, like I mentioned previously, in Toronto. It was like, okay, he's home. And then it was like, oh, he had no interest in playing. I was like, oh, well, this is... You know, now it's done, and he could go to Europe if he wants to, but now it looks like he wants to play again, and there's, again, buy low, hopefully you could develop these guys into something. If he does anything, I think that's a win, considering it's just a veteran minimum deal for a former number one pick.
And go ahead.
Even if he wasn't number one, he still would have been lottery easily, so it's not like it's a complete lost cause. It wasn't his, he didn't go number one because... You know, it was Cleveland who basically was like, we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, but they were smart by knowing to give up on him ASAP and then trading him with the Wiggins pick for Kevin Love, which in a way did work out for Cleveland. Do you think they'll miss anybody? We're talking about people that are gone, Jared Jack, Thaddeus Young, Wayne Ellington, Shane Larkin, who signed overseas, Donald Sloan, Andrea Bargnani, Willie Reed, who went to Miami as a big man, Thomas Robinson, Markel Brown. Are any of those guys going to be missed?
Not really. Thomas Robinson, I'm surprised he's done really nothing. Which, you know, everybody sort of is shocked by that. And Shane Larkin, I don't know why he hasn't gotten a chance, because he's not bad as a backup, but I don't know. He's just one of those players, I guess, who just couldn't make it.
Statistically, you know, it's pretty bad across the board. The only things that they were, to me, middle of the pack on were field goal percentage and assists, and also 3-point field goal percentage. Everything else, they were just near the bottom. Do you see anything where they can find their niche and spike? You know, I think the 3-point percentage might stay high, given that Atkinson came from, you know, as Nate Duncan's podcast calls it, Atlanta Hawks University, the Spurs of the East, as they like to say. And so I think that'll stay high, but I don't know if they're going to take like a ton of threes all of a sudden. They don't really have a lot of 3-point shooters on this team. They were 27th points per game. They were 23rd in points allowed. Defensively, they efficiency wise, they were near the bottom. I mean, but where does the improvement start? I mean, this is almost ground zero in a ways.
You just sort of hope, you know, you could get your defense and just have, you know, work on your efficiency and just let's not jack up threes and, you know, make bad shots. Let's just make our possessions count. You're not going to have that run and gun, you know, free passing Atlanta Hawks style. I think it's going to be more of a controlled, let's sort of slow these things down. Let's get these kids learning what to do.
Well, that's what the Hawks were kind of like when Mike Budenholzer first got there. Remember, they had a losing record before they played the Indiana Pacers, and where it started with Atlanta. And actually, I'm just remembering Atlanta was the very first team that we did in any of our episodes. It was like, I believe it was our very first team. And they, and they slowed things down. But then once the team ball got going and they started falling in love with the threes, that's when things started to pick up for them. But I agree with you. I think we might see a little bit of a duplication of that, where things are really slowed down for Brooklyn because they just don't have the talent. They've got to learn how to play together. Because so many of these players are still new on this squad. But well, let me ask you this, to wrap up the Nets. They had 21 wins last year. Do you see more or less?
Oh, probably less.
You'd say less for sure.
I'd say less, because you lose, you know, your main cornerstone was Thaddeus Young. And as good as Lopez is, you don't really have much around him. So you just sort of hope these guys take some steps and you get, you know, Kat LeVert's healthy and McCulloch is, you know, he's developed from year and Jefferson.
Ronnie Hollis Jefferson, who we both like a lot.
Yeah, he was looking like, you know, he was going to be the defensive lockdown guy. And so maybe
he should be the starting small forward next season. Should be.
He should be, but Bogdanovich will be the sixth man, and you know, yeah. either or, and
yeah.
So there's, you know, and the main issue is just, well, right now you're starting, you know, two guys, Sean Kilpatrick, who did really good out of nowhere out of the D League, but you know, he's not really the 3-point shooter that you need, and Jeremy Lin is not the 3-point shooter you need, and Jefferson is not a shooter, so points might be hard to come by.
Is Brook Lopez a Brooklyn Net at the end of the 2017 season?
I don't see why he wouldn't be. I don't see
an urgency to trade him, you mean?
There's no urgency to trade him because his contract isn't that bad. And unless somebody gives you, like, this really good deal
with draft picks on the back end.
Yeah, because everybody's still worried about his injury history. Yeah, he was healthy last year. Last 2 years, I think he's been healthy. But, yeah.
He came back. He got healthy at the end of the regular season that got him into the playoffs, and that's where he got that contract because he was really – actually, the team that they had lost to in the playoffs was the Hawks, you know?
Yeah, so, you know, he's been healthy, but there's still that lingering, like, oh, do we really need him and his injury concerns? But no, they're going to have a down year this year, and they'll be the bottom two teams again, and – but there's hope for the future because they got a ton of cap money. They could just, you know, offer max deals again next year.
Yeah, I see a little bit more wins, but maybe in the range of like 25 to 26. I don't really think any better than that would be suitable for Brooklyn. Let's go ahead and jump to the Western Conference and talk about the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, Kobe Bryant is gone, so are the Lakers – because I know that Kobe was not your best friend. Are you excited to talk about the Lakers now? Is it a new hope? Is it a new beginning now that they have a new head coach in Luke Walton?
Well, Kobe, you know, it was just one of those, like, well, you could respect him because he just kept it real to the end. But it also shows what goes wrong when you keep it real to the end. I want my money. I don't care about my teammates. Okay, now you're on a 20-win team and you look god-awful and you're a shell of yourself. Nope, I'm still the man. It's like, no, now it's just largely ceremonial.
You know what? Kobe Bryant wasn't on a 20-win team at the end of his season. He was on a 17-win team. They were 17-65.
I rounded up to be nice.
I mean, that's even worse than people expected, I would have to say. They had 2 wins in November, 4 in December, 3 in January. Just like about as bad as you can imagine. Yes, Kobe Bryant had his fond farewell with the 60-point game where they didn't call any fouls on moving screens and and Utah's defense gave up because they knew they weren't going to make the playoffs and a lot of that fun stuff. But they did make a few moves, some that are I would consider smart in keeping the, you know, the core, the youthful core of your team intact. Guys like D'Angelo Russell, who they didn't overreact on with the Snapchat thing. In fact, it looks like maybe soon it'll be Nick Young who's going to be stretched, even though he's got 2 years probably left because he's got the player option 2017. Would you stretch Nick Young at this point?
You can always hope there's somebody. I think they'll give him one more year because he has 2 years left, so you stretch him now, it's 5 years. Next year, it's 3 years.
But this is D'Angelo Russell's team now. You know,
yeah, it's Russell's team. You could just say, stay home. You can say go play for the D League. You could just say we don't need you here. But I think those extra 2 years, it's just, you know, the smartest thing the Lakers did was get rid of their coach, who, you know, there's a difference. There's a difference between tanking and then just being really bad at what you're doing. Mm-hmm. If you had said, I'll play Julius Randle and Larry Nance Jr. 35 minutes a night. They're young. They need to, like Denver did. Denver had no prospects of winning. They're like, we don't want to win. So we're just going to play our guys, let them learn on the court. Nope, I need to play my veterans. Getting Meta World Peace in there is more important than getting Julius Randle, who essentially was a rookie since he played 7 minutes of his, you know, real rookie year.
He averaged a double-double, if you could believe that, Julius Randle.
Yeah, he was efficient, but, nope, can't play him because I need to play my veterans because these guys need to learn. Like, learn what? The old school of NBA is so far over. It's a completely new era, and you guys have to learn with on-the-court training. That's why they have this D-League, because, we need them to get them game action. We can't just have them learn from the veterans and then all of a sudden be good.
Yeah, I think you make a good point there, that the NBA has become a little bit flavor of the month-ish, where if you're hot, they're gonna go with the hot hand. And the moment you cool down, they're going to find somebody else that might take your place. You know, and for the Lakers, we might see a little bit of that because they got a lot of youth now. They drafted Brandon Ingram with the number 2 pick. Did not get number 1, but they saved their draft pick from being swindled by the Philadelphia 76ers. They still have a rain check with the Sixers on their draft pick. Either next year or the year after that, one of them they're going to have to give up. They're obligated to give up by 2018. But hopefully they'll be able to keep the next one. But for this one, they got Ingram. They got Avika Zubac, who decided to come over. Jordan Clarkson, they re-signed, who is on kind of an arenas provision deal where he was a second-round pick who at the end of his second year was available to be wooed by somebody, but he signed a pretty nice deal. Did you think he was overpaid?
No, you can't. That term is now over. That's thanks to the Evan Turners and Timothy Mozgov of the world.
Well, the expansion of the salary cap, you know, with the percentages and the new max money. Yeah, a lot of that is kind of changed.
Yeah, it all goes by the wayside. They did, you know, we have a nice core of talent we like. Brandon Ingram, you are higher on him than I am. I don't see a 3-point game in him, and he's too weak to go.
He needs to gain a lot of weight. For sure.
Yeah, so he's going to get bullied around because he's going to be like, I could do my crossovers, and he's just going to run into, like, big, huge trees, and it's just not going to go anywhere.
I would seriously consider playing him at the 2 just to see how it goes.
I think that's the only place you can put him now until...
Yeah. Just to try it out.
You know? Until he gains more strength. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have, like I said, we have Randle, you have Nance, you have Ingram, you have Russell... Okay, that's good. Luol Deng.
Yeah, that's awesome. The free agency poo-poo platter of Luol Deng and Timothy Mozgov.
Luol Deng, great teammate. Nobody's ever complained about him. Very high IQ.
He's not a $70 million guy.
Not, you know, he's not going to be a selfish player. It's just, now what are you going to do? You need to, you're not going to have a $70 million guy not play for 4 years. Mm-hmm. So it's like, why are you getting guys to be bad for a year or two? While Ingram and Nance develop, it doesn't make sense. Mozgov, you know, that's the old, you know,
Mozgov,
who are you bidding
was just
against?
The desperation. We need somebody to come here, so we have to overpay to get him to go here. That was essentially an overpay, getting Mozgov at $16 million a year for the next 4 years.
Yeah, and then the way all the centers felt, it's like, you could have gotten a lot better players for a lot cheaper.
That was the first one. Like, they didn't even think about Al Horford because they knew they couldn't get him. They didn't think about Dwight Howard, obviously, because of the history there. They knew they weren't going to be able to get even Ian Mahimi could have been a better pick than Mozgov. You know what I'm saying?
Ian Mahimi, Kevin Serafin signed for $2 million.
Nothing. Yeah, for nothing. Yeah.
You know, then that's okay. You got him for $16 million. Okay, he was injured and then, you know, fell out of the rotation because of the injury and you're on a super team. But it's just like, you're not bidding against people who's really ready to sign him for that much money. It was, you know, that's why, you know, Luke Walton, as long as we keep our expectations low, as long as we see these rookie young, like Brooklyn, as long as we see these young guys have efficiency and play defense, that's all you can do when you're a young team is just play defense.
Random questions here. How many minutes does Larry Nance Jr. get? He played well in the summer league. They really do like him, and even Byron Scott liked him. So do you think that he'll get a lot? Like, I don't know how many minutes he averaged. He had 5.5 points and 5 rebounds a game, but do you think he'll get maybe over 15 minutes a game?
Oh, yeah, he'll get 20-ish because they'll go, you know, they could go. I Avika Zubac, you're higher on him than –
I like Zubac. Yeah, he played very well at in the summer league.
But it takes a while for bigs to get used to the NBA speed. Mm-hmm. So especially Euro bigs, and Mozgov will need a breather. So okay, they could go small, move Randall to the five. You can put Nance at the four and play small ball. So he'll find minutes. It's just I don't know if he'll be the odd man out in the end.
Who will be the backup point guard, Jose Calderon or Marcelo Huertas?
Oh, Huertas.
You
Calderon
are that low,
is...
You are that low to Calderon, huh? He did hit the game winner against the Lakers when he was with the Knicks last season, at the tail end of the season.
Oh, he could still, technically...
Yeah. That's all he can do. He can hit threes. That's really
Yeah, and... He's just way past his prime, and that contract is really ugly.
The only things that the Lakers had high marks in were getting to the free throw line. I don't know how much any of that had to do with Kobe Bryant and his reputation for being able to get to the free throw line. They also didn't turn the ball over a lot. Their experience, obviously, with Kobe gone will take a dip, even though they have Jose Calderon in the mix now. How old is he? What, 37, 38?
52, 50.
Somewhere there.
Him and Richard Jefferson are collecting Social Security, I believe.
Everywhere else, they were just about at the bottom. You know, threes made, steals, defensive and offensive efficiency. They were dead last in assists and field goal percentage. So you can't get any worse than that. With Luke Walton coming from the Golden State Warriors, got that stretch where they were undefeated. While Kerr was out with the back problems, do you see anything carrying over here with his experience coaching a winning team that maybe that might rub off on the young guys for the Lakers?
Hopefully it's just the energy he brings into it and just the lack of the I don't want to say the, just the not the old school mentality anymore might help, but expect 17-20 wins again, but there's hope.
And let's go ahead and go back to another team that has a new head coach. I think there's only one team on this episode that does not have a new head coach, and they probably should have gotten one anyway. But let's go ahead and go back to the Eastern Conference for the next two, but the first one we're talking about here is going to be the Orlando Magic. Scott Skiles was not fired, though. He quit, right?
Yeah, he quit.
He basically said, this team is not for me.
He said, I don't like what's going on here. Good luck to you guys. I'm going to go my way. It was very abrupt, very shocking.
It was very surprising, but they made some decent leeway in finding the new head coach. They didn't sit on their hands, and they hired Frank Vogel, who I had heard was kind of considered for the Kings job too, but wound up going to Orlando. Frank Vogel had a very nice coaching tenure with the Indiana Pacers. That was more of a tenuous situation between Larry Bird, who wanted to change his style of play a little bit, and Frank Vogel, who was just kind of stuck in his ways. He wanted to play defense. He didn't want to go play faster. But with the Orlando Magic, you're on such a new team, such a different team in terms of what the Pacers were once he left there. So what kind of changes would you expect out of Vogel's approach? Because we know what Vogel does. It's defense. It's interior presence. It's slowing games down, defending the perimeter.
I was going to say, three-point shooting, not on this team.
Yeah, they love defending the three-point line. That's kind of their thing. But making threes, no.
Not with your starting five of Payton, Fournier, Jeff Green, Ibaka, and Vucevic. There's and Biombo on the bench.
Yeah,
there's going to be
a lot of names out there that we're going to be taking deeper dives in a second. But yeah, it's a really really mixed bag.
With
Absolutely.
That raw, it's like I don't know what Hennigan is doing. He built this roster, and then all of a sudden, I'm going to tear it down. Tobias Harris, let's trade for Ilyasova. All right, Ilyasova, let's just trade him for Ibaka. And it's just like, I don't know what's...
Every part of that trade from the Brandon Jennings deal is gone, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's almost like the trade never happened.
I don't think there was a pick involved, but even the bye-bye Tobias Harris, Detroit is happy and doing well, and Orlando, I think, just took steps back. And unless, you know, Maria Hezonja has this really, like, second-year epiphany and he all of a sudden becomes, like, this all-star, I think they're just going to be struggling for points.
Here's my one difference here between this team and every other team on this end. I do feel like there is an upside there to where at their best they could actually be a playoff team if Serge Ibaka, who they got in the trade involving Victor Oladipo, so that means the Oladipo era in Orlando is over. If Ibaka and Bismack Biyombo, who they signed, if they can work well with Nikola Vucevic, who's the scoring center or the scoring four, if they can work well with Evan Fournier at the 3/2, and then Elfrid Payton can take a jump, I mean, there's a lot of ifs there, but I feel like at their best, Orlando could possibly be a playoff team in the Eastern Conference.
On paper, yes, but it's just Aaron Gordon's out of position again, and it was supposed to be, okay, now I see you got rid of Tobias to free him up, and now
signing Jeff Green made zero sense.
Well, Jeff Green is on a one-year, $15 million deal. That's merely for salary cap purposes.
But that's $15 million.
Yeah, but now we can package him with, let's say, Vucevic he's the odd man out. He makes $10 million. Now I have $25 million. You can just cut Jeff Green on your end. We don't care. It's a one-year deal. Yeah. That's just, I need a big salary to make numbers work.
And then they pick up Jody Meeks, who is basically not going to be able to play this year from what we've been told.
And that's the way it's sort of been for the past couple of years. It was like, oh, Detroit got him, overpaid for him. That seems sort of strange. Well, okay, I see he brings his skill set in this. Oh, he just never got healthy.
DJ Augustin on a 4-year contract. At age 28.
At least he's not 32 like all the other guys.
I understand the idea. You wanted somebody to mentor Elfrid Payton. Maybe I understand why they let Brandon Jennings go. They didn't want him to be the mentor there, so they brought in Augustin. But, C.J. Watson, he's older, but he's on a shorter deal, and he's almost the same type of player that D.J. Augustin is. It just didn't compute for me. Who do you think is going to take the jump here between Payton, Gordon, and Hezonja? Because it's going to have to be one of those three people.
Has to be Hezonja. It has to be – he's the one – because without – Oladipo was – again, you were higher on him than me, but yeah, he was the main scorer on the team. And now we know Elfrid Payton can't score, and he was, one of the reasons there was that big rift.
Yeah,
because Hennigan is like, nope, I love him, I'm going to keep him. And he's like, I want to get rid of him. Well, I gave you Brandon Jennings, but I don't intend to re-sign him.
He's a decent assist man, but boy, he cannot shoot a lick.
He's just a poor man's Ricky Rubio,
Pretty much.
He regressed so far, but, Fournier, you overpaid for him a lot, but he did fit, and it's just, it's going to all, Hezonja has to step up in order to say, we're not going to play Jeff Green for 30 minutes a night.
Ibaka's weird because in the regular season, his numbers dipped. He's always had decent numbers, and especially when in the block shots and rebounding department, but it seemed like he was either unhappy or his production under Billy Donovan was not finding the right place. And then in the playoffs, he started matching up a lot with, Steven Adams and Enes Kanter in different lineups. He was in that lineup with Andre Robertson and Deion Waiters when they were just giving fits to the Golden State Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. It seemed like he was engaged, he was active, and then they traded him. So what kind of mindset would Ibaka be in right now? Do you think he's one of those guys that's just going to be a super energetic player regardless of where he's sent to? Or do you think there's a possibility with him on the last year of his contract of just being completely despondent and just having a really down year?
I don't think he'll be despondent and have a down year, because then that just hurts his, you know, that's the difference
between... I think he'd still get good money even if he had...
There's a difference between getting good money and max money.
Mm-hmm.
And we could say, well, is he worth a max? But Mike Connolly is, so apparently anybody can
be. Well, Bismack Biyombo just got 17 mil, right?
You know, for having a good 2-week playoff run.
Exactly.
So it's one of those, well, do you want, you know, Bismack Biyombo money, or do you want Evan Fournier money? There's a big difference. And as you saw, you know, Roy, you know, Hibbert with the Lakers last year, he had the chance to be like, okay, I'm going to, you know, make money. And it's just like, nope, I'm despondent. I'm done. I'm broken. And then, you know, it hurts your value on the end. And he's old enough now where he's been around, and especially, you know, coming, being international and whatnot, you know, he's going to be a professional and be like, okay, now you're going to run the system through me, as opposed to me being the, you know, he had moved from the third part to the fourth part on that team. So
3-pointers made, they were 22nd in the league. I don't think that's going to get better, honestly. I do think free throws made will get better, because even though Biyombo's not an attacker, Ibaka is. And the Thunder were always like tops in the league at free throws, at free throw attempts. And Ibaka was one of those guys that would get to the line a lot more than people would expect. So I expect their points per game actually to go up from 21st. In the league, I think they might be more in the middle of the pack. Defensively, they were 16th in efficiency. They were 17th in points allowed. I'm not sure if that's going to go up, to be totally honest, because I see a lot of holes in the defense. I really like Aaron Gordon as an X factor. You like Azonia. Re-signing Fournier made a lot of sense. I didn't really have any problems with that.
I like Gordon too. It's just, where is he going? He's not really a three. Mm-hmm. He's a little too big for that, but where, you know, you signed all these big men, so where is he going to find his, he's going to be out of position, and, you know, he's not a shooter, so he's, you know, it's just pure energy.
He's basically stuck as a six man on this lineup right now.
That's the problem, is I want to say he's the X factor, but where is his minutes going to come unless you move one of those many big guys?
Unless you're willing to take Biyombo off the bench and have him... Oh, and you can relieve Vucevic in certain situations and just play the one nickname I heard was the Congo line, but of Ibaka and Biyombo blocking shots. I don't know if that would work, because they're both in my eyes pure fives. But you know, we'll see though. Do you feel like Ibaka's a five, or do you think his ability to play with guys like Adams and Cantor in Oklahoma City let him stretch out to the four?
He can stretch out to the four. It's just, can he play with Vucevic? And, you know,
there's a lot of mixing and matching there.
Yeah, a lot of mixing and matching. And, you know, like you mentioned, Steven Zimmerman was supposed to go late first round, fell to mid-second. So dropped, nice little prospect.
Yeah, there's a few other, like, random ones that they got in the training camp rosters that we're familiar with. Guys like Nick Johnson. I'm blanking on a couple of the other ones. Just a few interesting names. We'll see what happens with the training camp rosters. Under Vogel, they had actually 35 wins, you know, so we're actually notching them really way down, saying that they're going to do worse than the 35 wins. Would you expect that?
Yeah, I think they're just down to, from just blowing. They just, you know, you've undone the things you were building up for the past 2 years. And I, you know, they're one of those teams like Indiana last year. I'm like, I don't know how to take them. Like, they could be a playoff team if they put it all together. But there's just a lot of mismatched parts. I don't see how it can go with this roster as it is.
Well, Vogel is in a similar position to when he took over the Pacers, when Jim O'Brien, his kind of like coaching mentor, was fired. So when he took over, you know, they were a losing team, but they did make the playoffs as an eight seed. And that was the experience that they needed to sort of take off from there. I kind of see similar growing pains with the Orlando Magic. I think the upside for them is higher, but I actually think that, like, on face value, that the chemistry is going to be a gigantic issue from year one under Vogel. And I think that they'll probably go to about maybe 32 wins, 32 and 50 is what I'm looking at. And okay, that would be the end of Rob Hennigan. I think that would be it.
I don't know what team he's building right now.
Well, I don't think he does either. That's the problem. He's freaking out that he might lose his job.
It was one of those, you were making good choices, making good decisions, and all of a sudden, let's just abandon that. And
let's go ahead and move on to the Philadelphia 76ers. 10-72. I mean, better? Seriously?
By default.
I mean, you can't, if you're a game worse, then you're the worst team in the history of the NBA. Statistically.
So, you know, by default, you can't be tied for the worst team of all time. So
okay, we got to try to keep this positive with the Sixers, because it's like there's just been such a long cloud, like just like vast cloud of negativity that's surrounded that team. So give me something, maybe a number one pick.
But it's number one pick, but everyone, that was the process. That, and everyone's like, yep, that's the process. Weird. We trust it. Everything's good. Well, Okafor and Noel can't play together, and everybody knows it. So that's how your process went, was making a very big mistake with Okafor?
Well, Okafor is a really good post player. If you look at his numbers on face value, he was one of the better players in the league in field goal percentage, 17.5 points a game, 7 rebounds, over a block a game. Did not have a bad year at all.
He didn't have a bad year, but the when he was drafted, was, well, we can't see him playing with Nerlens Noel, and well, they can't really play together. And
no, let's try to beat them both, and that turned out to be a red herring. Nobody bought that because they wanted so much in return.
Right now, their hope is, you know, their things are, they're going to be bad again this year. But okay, you got Okafor, you got Embiid, who's back, you got Noel, you got Saric. Okay, your front court is set. You got Simmons, who will be your starting three.
Yeah,
I don't know if they're going to try to go to a point forward type thing.
We've seen him at LSU. What did you see out of him in the summer league as kind of like the point forward? What did you see?
It seemed like that was the plan they were going to go.
But I'm just talking about the quality of play with Ben Simmons. I know he's playing inferior competition in the summer league.
He looked good, and he looked like any rookie. You make great plays, and all of a sudden, well, up, make mistakes.
Mm-hmm. His dribbling is decent when he does side to side. His passing is incredible. That's where you can really sell on Ben Simmons as a star, that he can be a distributor and a facilitator. That's where the LeBron comparisons actually work. Everywhere else, the LeBron comparisons don't work. You know, his jump shot is not broken, but it's a mess. You know, he's not a super aggressive attacker of the basket on every possession when he probably should be. You know, and he's got a lot of potential, obviously. You know, defensively, I think he's a lot better than he's shown. You know, the first time he actually tried to play defense in summer league, he got Charlie horses.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's almost like he didn't even do any of that work at LSU because he wasn't coached to do it, which is very disappointing.
Well, when it was one of those, like, I saw it before with Rudy Gay and Lamar Odom. It's just like, yeah, I know I'm leaving. I'm not buying into this system. You saw the difference between the non-conference schedule and the conference schedule. Once the conference is like, yeah, I don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm gone. I'm not buying into this. And the same thing happened, you know, with those guys. Just, well, that doesn't mean they're not going to translate. That's just, you know, they need to get some humility. But you're going to do a point forward. Just the issue with the 76ers is their backcourt or lack thereof.
Is this similar to the situation when Blake Griffin sat out for his real rookie year because of the broken kneecap injury? And then he came in, Vinny Del Negro was the head coach, and even though the Clippers were bad, you knew that Blake Griffin was a star and that they had something there. I mean, do you see something similar here with the entries of Joel Embiid, Dario Saric, along with Noel and Okafor and Simmons?
Well, yeah, it's just, name me one player who's not LeBron who came in as a rookie week one and you're like, well, he's going to take another year or so to develop, but we see it. Nobody's come in and just been like, okay, now I'm an all-star day one.
Carl Anthony Towns came close. It was close. Like, I would actually consider him an all-star.
Okay. So
that would be one. But LeBron actually did not make the all-star game his rookie year, if you could believe that.
Politics.
It was just one of those, we can't put rookies in the NBA. And you could cheat and say Ricky Rubio before his knee injury. But he had so much international experience before he went over. you know.
And that's the thing, is they're allowed to make mistakes. It's just you have, they have a mess of too many people now because of the process. And the process, you know, we could say what you want about it, but you're not selling high in Okafor. They're keeping them. You're not selling high in Noel. They're stuck with him. And you have two backups who are potentially you want to be starters as well. You can't have four power forward starters.
Well, let's see who they kept here. You know, they still have Robert Covington, who's a really, really cheap deal. I wouldn't even consider getting rid of him. He had, you know, he's got a lot of steals on his belt. They cut Carl Landry. I'm not sure about the situation with Hollis Thompson yet. Jeremy Grant is a good shot blocker. Keeping him makes sense. We don't really know what's going on with Nick Stauskas yet either, correct?
He's still technically there.
But he could be cut at any time. It's
he
one of those
was
things.
Horrible in the summer league in his year three, and nobody, you know,
yeah,
nobody sees much hope in him.
I like Rashawn Holmes. TJ McConnell should not have been starting at the beginning of the year. That's why they had to bring in Ish Smith for a trade. But now Smith is gone. He got signed by the Pistons. But McConnell's still there. I can see him as somewhat of a backup point guard now that they brought in Jared Bayless. Did you like Bayless and Gerald Henderson coming in? Coming in from free agency, do you think they'll be decent fits, even though
no,
Henderson's
Bayless
got
has,
a team option in the next
Bayless segment? Has been around, and Henderson is the definition of a mediocre player.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, oh, he's still there. Oh, he's been in the league for 10 years. Well, let's look at his numbers. Well, they're completely average. He's not.
Well, you know, they're a lot like Orlando, where, like, it's a real mishmash. But if it works, it could work out really well for them. But here's the problem. Their bottom is so low. Like, they're going literally from 10 wins. If you have a 20-win improvement, you're still 30-52.
Yeah, it's like they made the playoffs if they just get 10 more wins.
Exactly.
But the main issue I have with Philly is having Timothy Luwawu come over, because there is literally no space for him. He's not a 2. And the 2 is the only place you can get minutes, because I think Sergio Rodriguez will probably be the starter, and because
yeah,
Gerald Henderson's better suited for the bench.
It's not as bad as Prigioni when he was 34, 33, and he came over and signed with the Knicks. You know, and he had one decent year, and then the bottom fell out. With Rodriguez, I bet they could get 2 good years out of him.
Oh, Rodriguez is still good. He just sort of got dicked around and got stuck in Portland, and... Mm-hmm. You know, that was when they're all we're going to do is draft international people, and it was we don't know what to do with them, and he got buried. But, you know, so Luau, he would have been better off taking a year off, but, you know, playing international, but it's just, I don't see any room for him in that, and the fact that he signed, and then you got Elton Brand, now you have to cut somebody who helped you last year.
Who's more likely to win Rookie of the Year, Simmons or Saric?
Simmons.
Saric's going to get decent numbers at the 4.
He'll get decent numbers, but then you have to play all your other 4s.
Mm-hmm.
You can't now. You need to develop
I think Noel's going to turn into a 6-man, to be honest. I think that's going to be the game plan. I know it's a bit of a reach, but I think that might be the plan.
And then what do you do with Embiid? You have to get him minutes if he's healthy. So it's just they have too many bodies.
I think they're going to try to start Embiid, you know, with him and Okafor beside each other at times.
So there's just, like we could say, again, there's hope for them. It's just this year, well, you got all this talent, and now this is sort of like I wouldn't say Orlando. I'd say this is more of a Minnesota thing as well. You got all these young players. You don't have enough spots on the floor for all of them now.
Well, I mentioned that the one team on this class that we have that kept their coach was the Sixers with Brett Brown. Should he have been fired?
For why? It's not his fault he had a shitty team.
No,
they
but
didn't
he gave
under-
him an extension. That's when people laugh. They're like, huh, he got an extension for having the worst team in the NBA for the last 3 years, you know?
Yeah, that's basically the look. You didn't have a shot, so we're gonna reward you by giving you sort of we give you this time as to learn how to be a coach.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't intend to give you a roster. We cut your best player. We traded your second best player away. We don't even sign. We got you 10-day guy deals. You didn't even know their names.
They were third in block shots. I don't think that's going to change. The one thing that I think they were good at that they actually need to get worse at, yes, I'm saying that about the Sixers, is three-pointers made. They were 12th. They need to bring that shit down. They need to slow things down, get that pace from 6 to somewhere in the 20s, do what they're doing in Brooklyn. But it's going to have better dividends for them because they have a little more talent on that front court than Brooklyn does, obviously.
Oh, that shouldn't be a problem because none of those guys are runners.
Mm-hmm.
Simmons is probably the only runner.
But I don't think he's going to do it voluntarily where he's just going to go balls to the wall unless he's got just a lot of open court for a dunk, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, again, they'll be by default better than 10 wins. But, again, this is just the worst of the worst, so.
And now we talk about the Sacramento Kings.
Now, I found a little more hope than you did.
Now, is it just Boogie Cousins and the fact that he's an all-star center?
No. Or
there's just something else there?
They had the most dysfunctional clusterfuck season, but they had the highest win total since, what, 2008?
Yes. 2008, so, that was under Reggie Theus, I think. They just missed the playoffs by, a few games, I believe.
So, they did better than anyone expected with all that terrible turmoil. And then this roster we're looking at now is not the roster we're going to have at the end. Rudy Gay is not going to make it to All-Star break on this team. They're going to trade him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, he's incredibly unhappy, but I mean, he is on a decent contract. I mean, 13.
He has
a
team option. He's going to do it. So somebody's going to trade for him because he's still good. We're not going to talk about Georgios Papagenos.
Papagenos.
Oh, Papagenos is a pizza chain up here in New England.
Georgios Papagenos was one of their draft picks. They also brought in Malachi Richardson and Scal Labissiere.
Malachi and Scal are going to play in Reno this year.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben McLemore will probably be gone. Aflalo most likely be gone. So, you know, Malachi will replace Ben McLemore. Darren Collison has sort of personal problems to deal with right now.
Well,
so
signed Ty Lawson.
That's why you signed Ty Lawson, who claims to be motivated, claims now it's going to be my comeback story. So there's, you know, as opposed to Rondo and his baggage, so you trade one baggage for another. Garrett Temple as their third.
Rondo was racking up the assists, but the thing is, he was getting all the triple-doubles, but a lot of people felt like that whole Rondo campaign did nothing. In fact, it made the Kings worse, that it was actually a bad signing.
Well, he got all the assists, but it was just, you know, it was just the me first attitude again. And Cousins was still moody. And, you know, you got Cauley-Stein and Kostakoufos. I could see Koufos getting moved. Matt Barnes, solid veteran, as always.
I was Caspi. Not a fan of the Garrett Temple signing. I thought that was a bit of an overpay, especially giving him 3 years, because the third year is a player option. So, that one kind of.
That's an option, but if you bring in a young, you can't, you know, you have a young, you know, point guard, young.
Old, though, you know?
That's the way the year went. I was more, the Aflalo deal was he's proven nothing his last three stops.
Yeah, all he can prove is that he can have that one, weak stretch where he can score in bunches.
Yeah, so people jumped off the Malachi Richardson bandwagon pretty quickly. I don't know why.
A lot of people didn't like him in summer league. They thought that he's just a bad fit at the two in the NBA. But he had an ability in the NCAA tournament to just go off. So maybe he'll be like the new Isaiah Thomas.
Well, nobody thought he could do anything. He wasn't even supposed to be on the radar this year. And he overachieved at Syracuse in the ACC.
Yes.
So who's to say he's not going to develop and is a quick learner? So
yeah, they don't want it to be like another Rodney White. You remember when Rodney White had that one great stretch in Charlotte, and then he turned that into a lottery pick? They don't want that to be, you know, Malachi Richardson. Scal Labissiere, he's 20 years old. He's thin as a rail. But once he gets some weight on him, I think Labissiere will actually pay off for them. But that's years down the line.
Well, don't forget, there was one main well-known draft, you know, website that had him ranked above Simmons for
number one. Yeah, because he was the mystery prospect from Haiti. Then he goes to Kentucky, and he actually, in a weird way, almost hurt himself playing at Kentucky because he played out of position. You know, he has a bit of a jump shot, and he didn't really apply it well. Do you see a lot of movement here with this team? I mean, I'm kind of smelling some guys getting traded pretty soon, whether it be Gay.
That's why I said once. That's why I have hope, because they, not only did they overachieve, but this roster is going to look vastly differently. And as we know it with Dave Yorger, he's put up solid numbers.
I totally forgot to mention that Dave Yorger, who was fired from Memphis, is the new head coach for the Kings.
So he can, you know, you got a lot of big men. So maybe Papagiannis, he didn't do too well in the summer league, but Yorger knows how to work with big men and lots of big men.
This team was 30th in points allowed, 23rd in defensive efficiency under Dave Yorger. That's got to be better, right? I mean, it's going to have to get better.
It's got to be better, and you know I think they're gonna keep Cousins this year, but if they don't trade him at the end of the season, you know he's not coming back.
But I mean, how important will it be to try to keep him happy, and what would keep him happy? Would it be making the playoffs? Would it be like a 40 win season where you miss the playoffs but there's hope? Like what would have to do it to turn it around for Boogie?
Just progression. They did better in wins last year, but he had a coach he didn't like. He said, you know, he had the last two coaches
he
didn't
like. He did not
like
George Karl the moment they hired him.
You know, it's get a team around me. Don't waste me. You know, we have Kevin Garnett in Minnesota as history. Well, we didn't put anyone around him, and then he was wasted his prime years. And he's like, I don't want that to be me.
Well, not just that. They fired a coach that he liked. I think he liked Dwayne Casey. And they hired Randy Whitman, and he was just like, that's it, I'm out of here. You know, that was the last straw, you know?
So hopefully he and Yorger will be like, look, I had Zach Randolph, who was also a malcontent and, you know, quote unquote. And, you know, we did very well. So
yeah, and he was an assistant under Hollins all that time. So he was there through thick and thin with the Grizzlies. So hopefully they can just install him out the gate and he can kind of bring that grind into the Kings. I think it's a bit of a stretch, but there's a little bit of potential there. You know, there's some ones that they lost. Trading Marco Bellinelli actually was smart. You know, now not letting Seth Curry go for nothing, I did not like, you know, but there, you know, that's them's the breaks. Ben McLemore, you got to show something at least in the first month of the season or he might get traded.
He's had 3 years too.
This is it. Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's, you know, no contract extension, no nothing. So, you know, last year they overachieved. I don't expect them to have 35 wins again, but with the right trades, I give them sort of an incomplete because, you know, something big should happen with them. If it doesn't, complete failure.
Yeah. They were also the fastest paced team in the league. I don't see that this year. I do not see that this year. I'm not trying to say like all the bad teams should slow things down, but it is a decent like defense mechanism when you're a bad team to try to keep games close. You know, I know the NBA is all about pace and space now. Let's get open threes. Let's get going. Let's get easy baskets. But for some of these teams, it's just easier to slow things down.
Yeah.
I mean,
and the sad thing is, all we're talking about is, you know, with all these five teams. Oh, you gotta learn defense, and don't worry about shooting. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
All right, let's go ahead and as we wrap up, now that we've gotten to our final team with the Kings. So we talked about the Brooklyn Nets, the Los Angeles Lakers, the Orlando Magic, the Philadelphia 76ers, and the Sacramento Kings in the Please Stop Believing class of our team previews, the bottom rung, as you if you will. There's no negative here unless you want to throw in who can we put below the Sixers? Like every NCAA college team. Most EuroLeague teams?
Most EuroLeague teams, most other professional teams.
Like, could
period.
Real Madrid give FC Barcelona give one of these teams a run?
The top EuroLeague teams would probably beat them. Mm-hmm. But there's, again, the only team on this list, at least on my side, that's not trending upwards is Orlando. Mm-hmm. They took a steep decline. All these other teams, well, Brooklyn's at the bottom, but they're building. Philly's at the bottom. They're building. Lakers are at the bottom. They're building. Sacramento, I see building.
Yeah, you see building. I see breaking down.
So, like I said, Orlando's the only team we both agree, like, yeah, they took a lot of steps back. Last year, they're on our all hope first team.
Orlando
this year,
was
it's just
a
like.
A team that gambled and they didn't lose the house, but they were still kind of, they were still way in the back of the pack. This year, they bet and now they might lose the house. You know, that's where the difference is. Let's go ahead and just get to the rankings here from 30th to 26th. You could do it whatever order you would like, and I'll give you mine.
30th is obviously Brooklyn. I think they just don't have talent.
Okay.
Philly and Lakers tied for 28th. I think you have one over the other.
So you would have them tied for the 28th spot, 28, 27. Okay.
Orlando by default would be 26th, and Sacramento would have to be 27th.
Okay, so you would have Orlando better than the Kings?
Because Orlando shouldn't be in this group by just looking at the paper. Mm-hmm. It's just we have a lot of just math problems that don't go anywhere. It's like, you know, when you get like a new piece of electronics and you just have wires all over the place. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, how does everything connect? I don't know. This equipment looks awesome, but I don't see where everything fits. And that's just Orlando's problem. If you know, Vogel comes in and everything fits in place, like, that's what it was. Why didn't we see it? It was just so simple.
I agree with you with the Nets being at the bottom this year. I like the Lakers there at number 29 as the second worst. I actually have the Kings above the Lakers. Then I have the Sixers, and then I have the Magic. I have the Magic at the top because it's the one team that I actually think might be able to make the playoffs at their best. So So every question we're going to ask is, do you have a team that you think could jump up to the next stage? Or to the lowest. Well, you know, this is the bottom. There's no lower than this. So if there's a team that I think can jump up to like a better chance.
Or Orlando, it really shouldn't be down here, but they are.
Well, they are because we're projecting.
That's just the way it came out. But, yeah. You know, there's no way you should.
Because if we were really, really optimistic, we would probably put the Sixers. I would have actually considered taking the Sixers out of here. But the thing is, the track record is so morose that you got to put them in here, you know?
Well, the thing is, they're still terrible, and they're still going to be terrible. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to win yet. They brought Elton Brand because, like, well, we realized, oh, we don't have any veteran leadership. Nobody knows how to do anything here. We're just creating a losing culture.
They trade Kendall Marshall for Tibor Pleiss, and then they cut Tibor Pleiss. You know,
just because they were so...
Yeah.
Again, that was A for the picks, and, well, we need more second-round picks. No, you don't need picks. That's the problem is you have your assets, and then, you know, now, Noel, you got to start paying him. What are you going to pay with Okafor? You're going to, you know, now you're getting to too many players who are going to start commanding money. Oh, well, the salary cap is super huge. Well, there's still roster spots. Right now in training camp, they have, like, 20 people. They're maximum 20 people, and I'm pretty sure, like...
It's 15, I think, when you start...
15 you could keep, but I think they have, like, 17 guaranteed contracts or something. Like, all the 20 have at least partial deals.
Well,
the
only one of them is Landry. Landry got waived, so that's one else.
Kendall Marshall didn't have a guaranteed deal. That's why Utah just cut him. But Pleiss's $3 million was guaranteed. They're like, we don't care. We'll just eat the money.
He got the Gerald Wallace slot. We just need to spend the money, so see you later. Go have
fun. Here's two second-round picks. We don't need those picks because we have enough young talent that we think we're going to keep. So here, take our picks. We just need to get this money off our books. Okay, we'll and that's how you can't get better. If your philosophy is, oh, yeah, we have $3 million to burn because, well, we'll just take two more second-round picks and –
Okay, a little rapid fire concerning these teams before we start closing things out. Does Brett Brown keep his job?
Yes.
Which coach is in the best position? Which new head coach of the four that we talked about is in the best
Joerger.
Position? You like Dave Joerger in there?
Because that, again, you said that situation is such a mess. If he brings literally any stability, that's a huge win.
I think it's Luke Walton because he's got the young core to build up with him. They're kind of all fused in together, so he can protect himself from being fired. And also his track record at Golden State. Player to watch.
I think we both have to agree it's Gordon. Now, we're not going to say Simmons or Saric, or I think it's going to have to be Aaron Gordon to see where, because we know what he can do, and we need to see if he can find a position on that team. Because if he gets buried, that just might be, you know, that might be a very hard road for to bounce back from.
Yeah, mine is tied between Simmons and D'Angelo Russell, you know, because this is it. I mean, Russell, this is time. You know, so it's I just want to see how he reacts to it. He might just have a rotten sophomore year. We'll see. And I think that's going to unless you have a couple of other little nuggets for these five teams that you want to throw at me before we start to wrap things up.
Nope, I gave you my trending upwards and downwards, so I think I'm good.
Are you looking forward to the next one? Do you want to tease the next one, or do you want them to wait till next week for the name of it?
Well, by default, this was the bottom, the bargain basement. Now we're moving on to the Salvation Army.
I mean, are people going to be surprised by a couple of the names on the next one? Because I feel like there's going to be one where people are going to be like, huh? You know?
I think people are just surprised we put Orlando this low.
Okay.
That might be the – we're already
they
like –
we're a 35-win team, so you have a point. You know?
We have two 35-win teams down in the last, you know, four, so – you know, we're sort of going out and really projecting kind of hard. We're not being, you know.
Well, it's the only way you can go. As we close out, actually, obviously, now that it's September, the gridiron, you can smell the autumn in the air if in some places. And, well, when is autumn? Is it September or October? When is it officially autumn?
Isn't it like October? October?
Well, for me, it's at the end of October because it's like...
Well, your autumn is, you know, you have 2 weeks of autumn, 1 week of winter.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of crazy struggles here in the last month with the floodings in Baton Rouge. Thankfully, everyone in my family was okay. And then I know you have family in that area too. You know, a little bit of a scare there. All, you know, thoughts and prayers, obviously, with everybody in the Baton Rouge with the flooding and also with the incident at the with the shooting with the police officers after that man was killed. But that's just a lot of really turbulent things going on in Baton Rouge, along with on the sports side the football team with LSU. Is this the end for Les Miles?
It really sort of has to be now. I think they've.
I mean, I know they've just reached changed the quarterback, there. But I don't know if that's going to save them.
If they win out, I think. I told you earlier that if they beat Alabama, I think they might be forgiven just due to the intense hatred
remember,
of...
Well, Mack Brown beat Oklahoma the year he was fired because he...
Well, also, Mack Brown had been there for so too long, and they needed a culture change, period. That was just Texas, and you can't keep holding on to all those 10 years ago.
Overinflated recruits, too. No, like... Five-star guys just because they were in Texas. You know, it got to a point where it got to be a little bit silly.
It got to that and just, well, we're Texas. Just like, we're the Lakers. You want to come here. Well, why is Texas A&M signing our guys? Mm-hmm. Why is Texas A&M getting five-star in-state recruits? We're Texas. You know, we're the Lakers. We're Hollywood. Well, who wouldn't want to sign with us?
If you had a chance, like, oh, go ahead.
It's just, you know, I think if they just beat Alabama and maybe Wisconsin's better, you know, again, essentially it was a road game at Wisconsin.
Yeah, we're talking about the Lambeau Field loss, Wisconsin, where Brandon Harris had like a complete like meltdown, you know, and then it continued on in the game against Jacksonville. And
just uninspired offensive play. It was
now there's other teams, obviously, other than LSU. That's just our team because that's who we grew up with. Give me your college football playoff. Just throw.
Alabama will win it easily, and
that's one.
It's who cares who's the rest?
I agree with Bama. Alabama, Michigan.
Clemson is the trendy pick. Michigan's a trendy
state.
Pick.
I think Florida State's going to get him. Did you see Lamar Jackson for Louisville? He had like a 600-yard performance against Syracuse.
Against powerhouse Syracuse.
Well, remember Leonard Fournette had to go to Syracuse last year. And yeah, he had like a 70-yard run, and then he had an 80-yard touchdown run that was called back. So, yeah.
Yeah, so, again, this is against Syracuse here we're talking about.
No, I'll pick Florida State over Clemson. Obviously, we have a little bit of, like, inventory in the college football season to look at, so we can at least judge by that. But Whereas in the NFL, there's none. You know, the NFL season, to be fair, honest, is kicking off as we heard, like getting ready for this. Just one game. The Panthers lost to the Broncos in the Thursday night kickoff game. Give me your Super Bowl.
That's also filed under Patriots, because Brady and Belichick will be angry.
Oh,
and
boo. Oh, boo. Locally.
And if it's not the Patriots, I'd probably Steelers, because really the AFC is not that good.
Are you still not a Patriots fan yet? Are you still, like, is the Saints fan and you still alive and kicking?
I'm still a Saints fan, but, you know, it's more of,
I don't think the Saints
cares?
Are going to the Super Bowl, though.
I don't think the Saints are even going to win 8 games.
I think they're going to be 4-12.
Yeah.
I'm on the super pessimistic side.
Trendy pick is also Arizona and Green Bay, so they're my final four teams there.
I'll go on a limb. I'll say Green Bay in the NFC, which is not a limb, but the other one is, and that's the Cincinnati Bengals, who cannot win a playoff game to save their life. I'll say this.
All right. So since you're against the Patriots, I'll say Steelers and Cardinals.
I mean, it's just so random, the NFL. We were talking about this morning, that it's probably the World Series is hard to predict, too, because the parity in baseball is so deeply embedded with the revenue sharing. But the Super Bowl is harder to predict. It's harder because the momentum swings are so lofty in the NFL. Like, one thing could just change it all, you know?
Yep, and literally one year away.
We were the worst to the best. Look at the
exactly. We're top five, and now all of a sudden, bam, we're golden.
It's not like I don't watch NFL football. Like, I know the teams, I know who's good, I know who's bad. It just shocked me watching the Super Bowl with Denver's defense, because I just had memories of Denver's defense giving up one touchdown after another against the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl. And then all of a sudden, I'm watching them play the Panthers, and they're just destroying Cam Newton. It's like, how did they become the best defense in NFL history all of a sudden? It's kind of strange.
Cheap hits.
Oh, poor Cam. Nah, I can't cheer for Cam. Not even you could cheer for Cam.
I can't cheer for him, but the hits were so – they were targeting him the whole time. It's just the refs were like, oh, we care about concussion.
You remember what our boy, the former Saints defensive coordinator, Greg Williams, used to call him? Remember me shots. That's what those were. Well, you don't remember him because you're concussed.
You can't have this, we care about concussions, and, oh, we're not going to call any of this. Yeah. And
I mean, are those legitimate issues, to put it full circle, in the NBA concussion protocol and star players not having to get the same type of, like, go through the same process of treatment so that they don't have to skip many games? Like, do you see that kind of transparency a lot in the NBA?
Well, there's not as many concussions. Just if you take a bad fall, you're automatically taken to the locker room pretty much.
Well, not only that, there's so many different divisions of injuries, like the PUP list, the physically unable to perform, IR. I don't even know there's an IR in the NBA, to be honest with you.
Well, he's probable, he's questionable, and it's just, it's all...
Like, we didn't even know Leonard Fournette wasn't going to play until, like, Saturday morning. Like, super secretive in football.
The NFL is they're not doing too good right now, and they're just like, we're going to cash in, and they have troubling times ahead of them, I think.
All right, and with that pessimistic point of view, we're going to go ahead and close out this NBA podcast. But on behalf of Adam Murray, Sam Reed, so see you next week.